From NPR and the Futuro Media Group, it's Latino USA. I'm Felix Contreras from NPR's Alt Latino, sitting in for Maria Hinojosa. For many Latino youth, navigating the universal pressures of adolescence is only part of the problem.
Unfortunately, my mom was part of the military at a really young age. So she was taught to torture and to just be violent.
I think some of the mental health issues that I've developed are due in part due to the, the racism and the homophobia and transphobia experience, so not feeling safe.
Just the thought of medication was something that my family was not supportive of. And I personally had my own stigma around depression, and I didn't understand that it was an illness.
Growing up Latino and surviving to 25. Coming up on Latino USA, I'm Felix Contreras. Stay with us. It's Latino USA. I'm Felix Contreras, sitting in for Maria Hinojosa. As we prepared a special show this week on mental health issues among young people, we saw a major development in our national conversation on immigration reform. On April 17th, the so-called Gang of Eight introduced the long-awaited Senate bill detailing the most comprehensive reform in decades to this country's immigration policy. The trade-off at the center of the bill? Intensified security measures on one side, and tiered entry and permissions to live and work in the U.S. on the other. Senator John McCain, Republican of Arizona, had this to say about the proposal in an interview on CNN.
A lot of my conservative colleagues have significant questions, and they're legitimate. This is a start of a process. This is a vehicle that requires hearings, requires input, and we welcome all of that. I think my other seven colleagues have done a great job. I am guardedly optimistic that we will see finally the end of this long, long trek that a lot of us have been on for many years.
We too have questions about the directives and figures in the proposal. For starters, no one living in the country without authorization would be able to gain legal status until 90% of those coming without authorization are apprehended and turned back. How will the number of illegal entries be determined? In a shift away from migration based on family ties, the definition of family would be limited to spouses and children of those applying for legal status. How will this reshape families already separated? And how will a new merit-based system for screening future immigrants affect American industries that have become dependent on cheaper and unauthorized labor? In the coming weeks, Latino USA will follow these and other questions to help you understand the devil in the details. How many times have you heard a group of Latino teenagers yelling this to each other?
This crazy.
Adolescence is hard on kids anywhere, but for many young Latinos in the U.S., normal adolescent craziness can be compounded by problems of immigration, alienation, abuse, you name it. The fact is, young Latinos in the U.S. have high rates of depression and anxiety, things that can lead to substance abuse or even suicide. Here's the story of 22-year-old Claudia Mendez from San Francisco. Claudia's mother immigrated from El Salvador, where she'd been a soldier during the country's long and violent civil war.
Unfortunately, my mom was part of the military at a really young age, so she was taught to torture and to just be violent. I don't hate my mom or don't forgive her. I understand that she's definitely has been through a lot, and she can't be a loving person because the world wasn't loving to her. living with my mom was very restricting, very hard to live with, because just there was so much happening that I think that if I would have continued living there, I probably wouldn't be here today. It just wasn't a safe place for me to live in. There was a lot of mental, physical abuse. I was placed in foster care at the age of 16. So at first I was misdiagnosed by everybody thinking that the person abusing me was my stepdad, but in reality it was my mom. But once I was placed in therapy, I decided to tell my therapist that in reality who was abusing me was my mom. And once that happened, instead of being reported, my therapist ended up telling my mom. Art therapy played a big role in my development because it gave me a place where I could actually express myself. Because for so many years, I couldn't trust the therapist. I couldn't trust a lot of the adults in my life. So I just kept bottling everything inside and just kept working, just having the goal that I would go to college and someday just get over everything. Obviously, later on, I started having like depression and just feeling really sad because I mean, I didn't have family, I didn't have anybody. But once I was exposed to photography and the possibility of using photography as a way to express myself, I was able to overcome a lot of things, and now I'm able to see life differently and see that it doesn't have to be so negative. I can use everything that I've been through to help others and make it a better place for somebody else.
These days, Claudia is a senior at San Francisco State University. Her goal is to go to law school and work with young people placed in foster care like she was. Now, it's important to point out that being an immigrant or the child of immigrants doesn't necessarily mean someone has mental health issues. In fact, researchers talked about something they call immigrant paradox. Newly arrived immigrants tend to have better mental health than people born in the U.S. who are the same age. This wears off the longer someone lives here. But, by and large, Latinos don't get the help they need when they need it. Dr. Sergio Aguilar Gargiola has dedicated his career to the mental health needs of Latinos. Among other things, he's the founding director of the UC Davis Center for Reducing Health Disparities at the University of California at Davis. He says Latinos, and especially Latino youth, have many challenges.
We have the number one spot on the frequency of suicidal thoughts, having a plan to hurt oneself and attempting to hurt oneself. All of those three things are primarily happening with much more frequency in Latinas adolescents than other ethnic groups. So there is an already identified need in this age group, you know, which is a very important stage of development. A good percentage of the Latino families here in California and across the U.S. are mixed status families, which means parents migrated here to the U.S. They brought some children with them who were born in their countries of origin. But then they have other children here in the U.S. So they have children who are U.S. born, and they have children that are foreign born. And sometimes the children who were born outside of the U.S. have a different mental health than the kids that were born already in the U.S. Consistently for at least a couple of decades, we have reported that the first generation, those who were born outside of the U.S., tend to have better mental health than the second generation, those who were born here in the U.S. And that creates incredible dynamics within the family.
Another problem is that in many Latino communities, there is a reluctance to seek help for problems, what some call a cultura de silencio.
Así es. Hay una cultura de silencio. There is a culture of silence in the Latino culture, even depression, let's say, a severe depression, it is very uncommon for husbands or fathers not only to recognize that that is happening to them, to be able to accept that something like that is happening. And the other thing is with the children, you know, that if the kids are suffering from depression or substance abuse or a combination, that they don't feel that they can talk openly at home. You know, I'm a family therapist by training, and I can tell you that when someone suffers from, let's say, depression, a severe depression, you know, there is this protective networking in families that centers around not talking about it. You know, if you only were to have more will, or if you only were to have, you know, the character, or if you only were to toughen that up, then you won't have that problem, which is it's a tremendous burden, because what people often don't know is that things like major depression or other mental health problems like anxiety disorders are diseases as well. You know, they have symptoms that they are bona fide. They are absolutely real. But in addition of developing early symptoms of mental illness, they are also more prone to prematurely develop chronic health conditions like hypertension, you know, asthma, diabetes, certainly obesity as well. An extra issue is that once Latinos are able to get into services, they don't remain in services for too long. Actually, there are some studies that indicate that up to 75% of Latinos, when they get into mental health services, don't return for a second time. Just think about it. First, it is quite a chore to get into services when those are needed. And once that is accomplished, then they don't return. And we have a good reason to believe that the experience that Latinos have when they receive the services is non-inviting. It leads them not to do it again.
Dr. Sergio Aguilar Gargiola will be back in a minute with more stories about growing up Latino and surviving the 25.
Like the field of dreams, that if we were to build it, no matter how beautiful we build it, a good proportion of Latinos still won't come.
That's coming up. No se vaya.
And you claim you got something going, something you call unique. But I seen your self-pity showing as the tears roll down your cheeks. Soon you know I'll leave ya, and I'll never look behind, 'cause I was born for the purpose that crucifies your mind. So can't convince your mirror, as you've always done before, giving substance to shadow.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Latino USA. I'm Felix Contreras, in for Maria Hinojosa. We've been talking with Dr. Sergio Aguilar Gagiola. He's a family therapist who practices in California and a researcher at the University of California at Davis. He was also the principal investigator on the largest mental health study of Mexican Americans conducted in the U.S. Today, we're talking about some of the special problems of young Latinos. One of the most vulnerable areas, says Dr. Aguilar Gagiola, is sexual identity.
Not only being Latino, but being in the categories of LGBTQ, you know, they are not only not accepted by their own family, but also they are not accepted by other LGBTQ communities. These are layers and layers of obstacles that they have to overcome in order to feel validated as a human being.
I'm Nico Gabriel Reynoso. I'm from San Jose, from the Bay, South Bay.
Nico Reynoso is a third-year UC Davis student and a transgender activist. He lived his early life as a girl before transitioning with testosterone therapy and now says he does not identify as male or female.
I identify as a Chicana now. That comes from the word Chicano and Chicana, and, you know, that's very binary, and I'm non-binary, and I don't necessarily identify as a man or a woman. Growing up with a bunch of Mexicanos, you know, I felt comfortable in that home. But at the same time, there wasn't too much acceptance, you know, with being queer or being non-binary, you know. Coming out to my family as Nico has been a challenge. My mother, we were very close, and she loved me as her daughter, you know. So when I come back, you know, like several months on testosterone, you know, she flips, you know, and she's tripping out, you know, because I don't look like exactly like her daughter used to anymore. And she wants the best for me, and she's scared for me, that she's scared that people are going to want to hurt me and that I won't be safe, is what she told me. By and large, she's trying. She's trying real hard. She's trying to use my name. She's trying to use my pronouns, he and him. I'm 1 year on testosterone. The changes have been drastic. My voice is like lowered. I grow a full beard. My dad is stocky and very like well muscled, and I am stocky, and I'm getting my way to being very well muscled, and it hurts. And I mean, I struggle with depression and anxiety, and I'm also a survivor of sexual assault. So the mental health issues I struggle with, I have anxiety and I have post-traumatic stress disorder and depression. But I think it's really good to talk about it because it creates visibility. People don't want to talk about it and they get stigmatized. And I think these problems and issues are really common.
According to experts like Dr. Aguilar Gagiola, a good percentage of Latinos who do experience things like depression or anxiety don't even recognize what's happening to them.
In some national studies that had been conducted, over 50% of those Latinos who suffer from major depression, for example, had no idea that they had a major depression. So that is one of the problems. The other issue is like the field of dreams, that if we were to build it, no matter how beautiful we build it, a good proportion of Latinos still won't come.
I personally have my own stigma around depression, and I didn't understand that it was an illness. I felt a lot of shame around having depression.
Nicole Plata is a 25-year-old who lives in Pacifica, California.
I grew up in Eastside San Jose, around a lot of folks who are gang affiliated, as well as having a lot of issues with abuse when I was young, significantly younger, starting when I was about 2 or 3 years old. My mom worked from really early in the morning, and I, you know, had to deal with a lot of these challenges on my own. Just led to a lot of acting out and trying to find ways of seeking attention. And I got involved in a lot of really unhealthy relationships with guys when I was very young. I was arrested when I was 13 years old.
Nicole says that for her, the road to recovery was through religion and the members of her church and art therapy instead of traditional therapy.
I was about 22 when I was diagnosed with PTSD. A friend of mine actually from church suggested I start drawing again, and I started being able to visualize my recovery. But I had to be creative in order to find my own areas of overcoming.
This, according to Dr. Aguilar Gagiola, is the key to improving mental health for young Latinos, getting involved in therapeutic settings that feel comfortable to them.
Which means that instead of building services in buildings, you know, waiting for people to come to them, that we change a strategy and we go to people where they are in settings that Latinos feel comfortable with, and to create programs that don't carry the word mental health in them. For example, just the socialization programs, community pláticas comunitarias, or sports tournaments, or just having tardeadas or kermeses, or, you know, things that Latinos are accustomed to, can do so much for mental health than just having access to care.
Dr. Aguilar-Gagiola emphasizes one last thing. Latinos have to remember, he says, that access to healthcare isn't enough. It's more important to create the kind of safe environments where young Latinos can grow up and thrive. For this week, that's Latino USA. I'm Felix Contreras. Maria Hinojosa will be back next week. If you have any comments or suggestions, please call our listener line at 646-571-1228. You can also friend us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter, where we are Latino USA, all one word. Our program is produced by Carolina Gonzalez, Deborah George, Andres Caballero, Lita Hartman, Janaea Williams, Daisy Rosario, Michael Simon Johnson, and Michael Jones. We had production help this week from Andrew Stelzer, Pauline Bartolone, and John Kalish. Latino USA is produced by the Futuro Media Group in Harlem. The program was founded at the University of Texas at Austin. Maria Hinojosa is the executive producer. Join us again next week for another edition of NPR's Latino USA.
Latino USA is made possible in part by the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation and by the Marguerite Casey Foundation, dedicated to achieving a more just and equitable society for all, and the Ford Foundation, working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide, and by the California Endowment, building a stronger state by improving the health of all Californians. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Lumber Liquidators, supporting the Ronald McDonald House Charities, the National Braille Press, and NPR. Information at lumberliquidators.com. And the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, presenting the MacArthur Award for Creative and Effective Institutions. Winners are at macfound.org. And the SCAN Foundation, committed to aging with dignity and independence at thescanfoundation.org. This is NPR.